Prime Minister Narendra Modi surprised everybody on Friday morning by suddenly landing up in Ladakh. Remember, it was Friday. This is when Defence Minister Rajnath Singh was to go there for a briefing by the generals. But the Prime Minister went there instead, and he went straight to a formation in a place called Nimu, where he addressed troops of the Army and ITBP, Indo-Tibetan Border Police, who manned that border. Among the many things he said, he spoke one line which caught the eye of the Chinese. And that line was that the time of expansionism was over, that expansionism was now a threat to world peace, and time for development had come in. Now, the Chinese reacted very sharply, although he had not mentioned China by name, but they presumed usual suspects. They presumed it was about them. And then they said that with our 12 neighbors, we have settled our boundary. Problem is there only with two. One is India, and the other, I presume, is Bhutan, which is in some ways related to India, the issue of the boundary. Nevertheless, the point we are making is, could this message also have been directed at Pakistan? Or could this message also be directed at India? Because what the Prime Minister said, that the time for expansionism is over, this is the era of development. That expansionism is a threat to world peace is our words of, very fine words of pragmatic wisdom. But these don't apply just to China. You can address the Chinese with these words. You can address Pakistan with this counsel. And similarly, we can also look ourselves in the mirror and hear the same advice again. Now, let me go step by step. The Chinese, for example. The Chinese believe, I had said it earlier in Cut the Clutter, just as one ideology in India has an idea of Akhand Bharat, which is to restore India to not just the glory, but the size that it might have had under Ashoka the Great or Akbar the Great or in the Maurya period or Gupta Golden period or sometime like that. Similarly, the Chinese have also a fixation with what I called then Akhand Chin. So that is the fantasy about restoring China to the borders that it had at the peak of its glory in the past under Qing dynasty in the 14th century. So China has been pushing at a lot of its neighbors like that. In India, fortunately, this is only the ideology of one party. One party does not rule our country. It may be very dominant right now, but there are other parties, there is debate, and this is not our national ideology. In China, only one party rules China forever. That party now has somebody of dictatorial stature as its leader for a long time. Looks like he can be there for as long as he wants, a little bit like Putin. So, Chinese now think that they have the power and they have the success to realize that dream. Now, the question is, that hasn't worked for anybody because the Chinese have embarked on this mission. They've got the whole world turned against them. Everybody now sees them as a nuisance, except the couple of surrogate states or client states that they might have in their neighborhood. All others are worried. And quietly, it looks like a global alliance is coming up. It's not an alliance like everybody will pool in their ships and go and block Malacca Straits. But a global alliance is coming up against China because there is a pushback. Chinese also know that there is no way they can conquer any territory and keep it. Because in Ladakh, they're ask maybe little slivers or in the central sector, Uttarakhand or Himachal. But in the east, they want all of Arunachal Pradesh, which is 83,000 kilometers. Or as some Chinese analysts keep saying occasionally here and there, at least, quote unquote, at least the district of Tawang. Now, the Chinese know it's not going to happen. They cannot take any of it by military force from India. And yet, they go on and on with it. And because that is not settled, they are not willing to settle the other boundaries. Because this dream continues. And then we go on to describe how these dreams are not dreams, they are fantasies. And they are self-destructive because China is now suddenly from being darling of the world for a few years because it was driving global growth, providing cheap goods and not so much services, but cheap goods to the whole world. It is now seen as a threat by everybody, barring its client states, as I said. But there also problems will rise because as those countries get more indebted, and China is unlikely, they don't have the style of writing off debt, that will lead to problems as well. Now look at some other countries. Look at the other countries. Look at Pakistan, for example. Now Pakistan has spent 7 decades of its existence. Both India and Pakistan became independent at the same time. They became independent. In fact, Pakistan got founded then. Pakistan has spent 7 decades, again with the same idea of restoring to itself all of Jammu and Kashmir. In 70 years, not only has it got not an inch of Jammu and Kashmir from India, it might have lost some, namely Siachen Glacier and some more, but it has lost more than half of its country in 1971 because the eastern wing of Pakistan broke away and became Bangladesh. So that country has lost more than half of itself, but still it carries on with the same nostalgia that they have to somehow win Kashmir. They know they cannot do it. But in the process, what has happened? They have reduced themselves to a basket case, 13-1-3. 13 IMF bailouts in 30 years. India's last one was 30 years back in 1991. Since then, India has not had to go back to IMF. In fact, even in 1991, when India took money from IMF for the balance of payments crisis, even then, India did not need to avail of all of this. But Pakistan has had 13 bailouts. It's ready for one right now. They need one right now, desperately. They've driven out their intellectual and financial capital from the country. A country which had a per capita income that was 65% higher than an average Indian in 1985. When I first went to Pakistan, I noticed my eyes popped out. The country looked so much richer than India. That country now has a per capita income that is 30% lower than the average Indians. And that gap is rising. Why? Because it was in mid-80s that it decided to use terrorism and militancy, insurgency and subversion as instruments of state policy against India to get leverage against India. So they've destroyed themselves. In the process, they've nearly become a client state of China. They are also becoming an economic colony of China because so much Chinese debt and investment is coming in there. Not much else is coming from elsewhere. That it's causing an imbalance now. Why is it all happening? It's all happening again because of that dream that somehow we will get Kashmir from India. It's not going to happen. Now, see what's happened with Bangladesh. Bangladesh, meanwhile, in 1971, it is Bangladesh that was seen as a basket case, as a global problem with tens of millions of starving people. They had tens of millions of starving people. Today, Bangladesh has beaten Pakistan on all social indicators. In fact, it has even beaten India on several. Soon enough, it will also beat Pakistan on per capita income. Now, how did that happen? Because when Bangladesh left, when the eastern wing left the western wing in Pakistan and became Bangladesh, so not only did they liberate that territory for themselves and their culture and their language, but they also liberated themselves from this burden of conquering Jammu and Kashmir. Once that was off their heads, they've prospered and they are prospering and leaving Pakistan far behind because the gap between them is rising now very rapidly. On the other hand, look at the Pakistanis. They are stuck where they were. So I quote from an old friend of mine who's no more, unfortunately, Pakistan's poet of dissent, Habib Jalib. We have spoken about him and written about him in the past as well. He, on the May Day of 1990, I was in Lahore and they had a May Day Kalam Mazdoor rally, as they called it. he wrote in Nazm, specially for that day, he wrote these lines. That is when India and Pakistan were again about to go to war. They were poised to for war. One of the many occasions when we came to a near warlike situation in the summer of 1990, he said, Nashili aankhon, suneheri zulfon ke desh ko khokar, main hera hoon, wo zikr wadiye Kashmir karte hain. Which means after losing the country of enchanting eyes and golden tresses, namely Bangladesh, you are still fantasizing about the valley of Kashmir. So that is the price Pakistan has paid for that nostalgia, dream, whatever you call it. Then let's turn the gaze at ourselves. Let's do some navel gazing and let's see how this message applies to India. Now, we have a map of India. That is a map of India that we are philosophically, ideologically, and constitutionally obliged to restore to India, which means go back and get Aksai Chin from China, all of Pakistan-occupied Kashmir, Gilgit, Baltistan. We've also spent 70 years with that. We've had four wars. We haven't got any additional territory. One of those wars did result in Pakistan being divided into two, but we haven't got any territory. Even the little territory we might have captured in 65 and 71 had to be given back. In fact, if you go back even in 1962 in the war, the territories that China captured, almost all of those they had to withdraw from, or they withdrew from them. They kept a couple of tiny slivers, a few tiny slivers in Ladakh, essentially on the western side. Otherwise, they withdrew from everywhere. So even if there is a war tomorrow, God forbid, any territory that's captured will have to be given back. Because in the 21st centuries, countries can't capture territory and keep it. They can't change the maps of any region. Remember Bill Clinton on his way out of the subcontinent after the war in Kargil, he had said the maps of the subcontinent can no longer be drawn in blood. So what was true 22 years back is also true now. If anything, it is truer now. And sticking to these things doesn't work, because ultimately it becomes the same unfulfillable dream. Now, I will not dare to say anything more on India in this case. I'm only quoting in this column, this week's National Interest, from Admiral Arun Prakash, very highly respected former Chief of Naval Staff, a decorated war hero. He won his Veer Chakra in 1971 war when he was on deputation with the Indian Air Force. So flying hunters on bombing missions over Rawalpindi Airport, Chaklala Air Base. He won his Veer Chakra. He wrote an article in the Indian Express last week, where he said, look, I know that Parliament has a resolution that says take all these territories back, including Aksai Chin. But you have to think realistically, if in the 21st century it's possible to carry out a conquest or reconquest of territory. And he goes on to say that maybe Parliament now should look at the whole situation again and agree on drawing a map of India, which is defendable, which is sustainable, so that India can now focus on the more urgent jobs of development, growth, etc., etc. Because he's a decorated war hero and former Navy chief, he can say this, and I'm afraid he might also be getting trolled for this. But these are thoughts that we should not forget, because this is the concept of irredentism. Irredentism is an idea that came up in Italy in the 19th century. What was the idea? That a country must restore to itself all the territories it might have owned in the past. So in Italy in the late 19th century, the idea was to bring back all the Italian-speaking districts in which were now part of European nations neighboring Italy. Now, the history of the world since then, especially all of the 20th century, tells you that irredentism doesn't work for anybody. You want more examples? There are more examples in the article. Look at Pakistan and Israel. Both were formed as countries, ideological states, around the same time, after the Second World War. both remain ideological states, but see where Israel has reached and where Pakistan is stuck. Both had started out as democracies also. Both had started out also as darlings of the West, especially the Americans. Israelis have, their democracy has become stronger. They've remained a democracy. Pakistan mostly hasn't. And look at in terms of prosperity, stability, strength, where each country is. The only area where the Israelis have still failed is their fantasy also of annexing the West Bank. This government tried, but even they are now moving hesitatingly. Again, that is not something which is part of their national ideology. So once you make irredentism a part of your national ideology, you are heading for trouble. And that is why this message that Narendra Modi gave out today applies to all three of these great Himalayan neighbors. Because each one of these wants a bunch of territory from another among the three of us. All three of us are very powerful, large nuclear weapon states. None of us is going to lose any territory unless any of us gets destroyed as a country. The consequences of a nuclear armed nation state getting destroyed are too fraught even to contemplate. And imagine, God forbid, if that happened to one country of the three, what will happen to its rival? So it's time that all three take this advice to heart and recast their politics, dump this irredentism and move on, because expansionism of any kind is now not a possibility and not a good idea. Once again, anybody can argue back with us, with me, saying that, look, but these territories were ours. But you have to look at the real picture as it exists on the ground now.